B-Pod Studios.
Today on Talkin' Rock with Meltdown.
Tony Montana is my guest today on the Talkin' Rock with Meltdown podcast. You know him from Jack Russell's Great White and the original Great White, and his new project Shadow and the Thrill with their album Sugar Bowl. He's got some really good rock and blues tracks on here, as well as a couple covers. One of them, the cover of the song Crazy.
Gosh, you know, when I first heard that song, you know, when it came out, I just was mesmerized by it.
We talk a lot about that record, putting it together, the two-piece band. And what about rock bands he kind of digs currently?
I got to say, I think Dirty Honey's great. I like their approach. Greta Van Fleet, of course, these guys are really tracking in some areas that I just wouldn't expect.
Jack Russell from Great White gave me the question to ask him about the Night Ranger wallet story. And how about using fake props on stage back in the day?
Yeah, for sure, because you're carrying some, like, staging. You know, especially if you're an opening band, you can't carry much. Mm.
Tony Cardenas Montana is my guest today on the Talkin' Rock with Meltdown podcast.
This is Talkin' Rock.
Talkin' Rock.
Your backstage pass to some of your favorite rock artists. Here's your host, Meltdown.
Back at it again, another week of Talkin' Rock with Meltdown podcast. And this time around, it's with Tony Montana, of course, with Jack Russell's Great White, formerly from the original Great White. And now he's got this Shadow and the Thrill with their album Sugar Bowl, which is out right now. If you're looking for a really good blues rock album to get into, this is definitely it. It comes out in vinyl and all sorts of cool stuff. So we'll talk about that record. Actually, there's a couple covers on it, and one of them I'm kind of embarrassed to say I never heard before, and I'm like, this sounds like something else. Well, we'll get into that coming up here in just a little bit. As well as, like I mentioned in the intro, I texted Jack Russell, who said he'd love to do the podcast coming up again in the future, so we'll get him on coming up here before too long. But he just texted me, ask him about the Night Ranger wallet story. So that's what we'll ask him about coming up here in just a little bit. In the meantime, I was supposed to have Tony on last week, but if you caught the interview with Maria Brink, it's funny, Maria Brink from In This Moment, she's great, right? But you're listening to this interview, and I'm listening to myself last week, and I'm like, man, I am tired. I sat in a tattoo chair between about 10:45 at night and 6:30 in the morning, and I had to cancel Tony because I just couldn't do it. It was just too much. I got like 2 hours of sleep, had to interview Maria, had all sorts of stuff going on that day, and I was hoping that we could get Tony on again real soon, and he was nice enough to definitely come on. So I had to apologize for bumping him last week.
Oh, no biggie. That's no biggie.
Yeah, I had to I don't know if Michael told you or not, but I sat in my tattooist chair for 8 hours and left his house at 7 a.m. I'm like, you know, I was fried by that point. So it's like I had to cancel a couple other things, but I hope you understand.
Oh, no problem. No problem.
So Shadow and the Thrill is out, Sugar Bowl. And first thing, this has nothing to do with anything, but have you seen the documentary Searching for Sugar Man?
I've seen, you know what, I've watched about half of it, I think.
Okay.
And I apologize if there's any, if there's like, we're in the middle of a construction zone, so we could get a jackhammer going on at any second. It's possible. They may ask me to come out and saw something, I don't know. But, anyways, I apologize. But, yes, I watched a bit of it. And, you know, what an incredible story about a guy that just, you know, he really was an exceptional writer, and to have that bit of, you know, music just stuck out there, and then people always loved it. You know, like, he didn't know. It's pretty neat. It's a neat story.
And like I said, it has nothing to do with anything. And by the way, if you do have to do it, go cut something, or it'll just make this interview that much more memorable. So.
Let me grab my circular saw. I'll be right back.
Yeah, I've never had that happen before in all the interviews I've ever done. But anyways, yeah, like I said, Searching for Sugar Man has nothing to do with anything, but Sugar Bowl is out. And tell everybody about this record, because I found it to be like, it's more bluesy, but there were some parts of it where I'm thinking to myself, what does this sound like? And like, for example, like the song The Grind, it kind of reminded me of a little bit of Ian Hunter, Mott the Hoople type of sound.
Exactly. Well, it's the 70s. It's a cover of a 70s song.
Oh, that is a cover. Okay.
Bowen.
All right.
It is a cover.
There you go. All right.
And I've been sitting on that one for a long time. My old manager from Great White days, Guns N' Roses days, Alan Niven had suggested this song to me a long time ago. And I heard it, first time I heard it, I'm like, that is a hit song, man. Why did is nobody touch this thing? So, yeah, finally got to do it and do it right. And actually, that song features a Detroit native, Jimmy Bones, who plays with Kid Rock's band.
Yeah, I know Jimmy really well, yeah.
Jimmy's playing on that track. He just kills it, man. So that's a lot of fun, that one. Yeah, for sure. I want to tell you something, too. As soon as I jumped on the website and I saw you guys' logo, I'm like, I know this logo. So I went back through my archives and I found a picture of me at a club in Detroit with this huge graphic right in front of me on the front of the monitors. I'm going to send you a couple of these pictures.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Yeah, for sure. I'd love to put them on the website and put them on the interview. But I didn't realize that song was a cover, but I guess that just goes to show you that maybe I do have some as many hearing issues as I have. I never heard the original song, to be quite honest with you.
Most people haven't. And Tommy Bolin's, his catalog is pretty small because he died very, very young. He was in his early 20s, I think, when he died. So, he just didn't have a lot of time. But the time that he was around, he did some really great work with Deep Purple, James Gang, and did some solo albums. And that's one of the songs off the solo album.
Now, one of the other songs, obviously it's a cover, is your take on Crazy. So why'd you decide to do that one?
Gosh, when I first heard that song, when it came out, I just was mesmerized by it. And I think CeeLo's vocal just really, it's such an unusual track. It's really not an R&B song. It's not a dance. I don't know what it is. It's the production on it is so interesting. All I know is that I used to love the song. I always wanted to cover it, and I just wanted to play guitar over it, quite frankly. And I thought, man, it made me want to play, right? So once we got a chance to do it, I really, the idea of doing it more of in a blues format and to change the song and the time signature, we changed it significantly, but it's so fun to play over. So that really was it. I wanted to play, but then as soon as I decided to do it, my drummer said, well, if we're going to record this, you better sing it like it's the last thing you're going to do on planet Earth. Because if you don't, it's not going to come off. And so I said, all right, man. And that was my marching orders, and we went at it.
Now you've been in bands, obviously, Great White and Jack Russell's and whatnot. But so why a two-piece band?
Because both of us can play a lot of stuff.
Okay.
That's really, at the end of the day, I love to play bass and I love to play guitar, sing or whatever. And Brent is just a really super talented guy. He can put keys and drums and whatever. And so we had it, it's like, yeah, we got this. I went to track. I'd just throw on a guitar. We'd bash through the rhythm tracks and just go at it and just start adding things. And it just made it a little bit easier. There is, besides Jimmy Bones jumping on and doing keys, there is another guest musician, a guy named Tony Hall, who a bass player down there in New Orleans where we did the album. And he's known for playing. He's played with Bonnie Raitt. He's played with, Bob Dylan. This guy's just an amazing player. And he sat in on a couple of tracks. So I will defer if I know that somebody else is really more appropriate. And he definitely, Tony was brought some special sauce. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I've known Bones actually for probably the better part of two decades. Actually, I think I met him in 1998 for the first time. I just talked to him actually a couple weeks back. But that's a great band, by the way, Twisted Brown Trucker. How did you get hooked up with Bones?
Through my manager Pete Merluzzi.
Oh, okay.
Pete used to work for Kid Rock, and so I met a couple of the guys in the band there, and yeah, that was just as soon as we had this track, and I needed somebody who really knew how to play, like some really blues, you know, kick-ass piano parts, that was the guy. I mean, there was no question. And I tell you what, I mean, we've been talking to Bones about getting out to where you guys are, to as soon as it's cool to do a show, we're going to come out, man. I'm going to come out and we'll have Bones and his buddies, we'll all get out there and have a good time.
Yeah. Don't threaten me with a good time, because I'll have to show up and check it out. No, Bones is a great people for sure. So obviously, you know, growing up and stuff, you know, Great White is like at the heart of, at its core, a blues rock band, right? But as you get older, do you find yourself getting more bluesy? Because it's a pretty bluesy record.
Well, it's interesting that, you know, once we started really digging into the songs, and I have another album I did in 2000, which is called Tombstone Shuffle. And, and that album was kind of the same thing, where as soon as I started actually playing and actually doing and tracking the stuff, that's what comes out. You know, it as much as I would love to, you know, try to be, you know, whatever other kind of guitar player there is in the world, or, you know, this is what comes out. This is the expression and this is the phrasing that works for me. And then when I start singing, you know, that's pretty much it too. So, I would say it's innate right now, I think is what it boils down to. That's the music I love. You know, that's the music I love. I love rock, but I love those R&B influences on rock as well. You know, for sure.
Yeah, and there was a lot back in the day with, you know, especially like we were just saying with the Great White. Now, I was just listening to something about, you know, even the Zeppelin, obviously, with their blues influences and Sabbath, and it just goes way back. But, hey, so let me ask you about this. So what do you, is there any thoughts on the current crop of rock bands that are out there that might, you know, kind of move you a little bit?
I got to say, I really like, I think Dirty Honey's great.
Yeah.
I like their approach. Greta Van Fleet, of course, these guys are really, you know, in some air, you know, tracking in some areas that I just wouldn't expect that young of a person to be in. But you know what the truth is that, and I think we're going to see this. I think the whole of the rock business, I think it has to go back a little bit and pick up those influences and pick up those blue notes. It's kind of been pushed out of the whole writing process and a lot of what I've heard over the past, you know, 10 years or whatever. And the fact that these young guys are being moved by that kind of music, I think is a real good sign, because it feels real. You know, it feels like emotives, and it feels like a real person with real feelings trying to, you know, make a statement. So I'm down with that for sure.
Yeah, and as far as I'm concerned, a real people playing real instruments.
How about that? even if you make a mistake, even if you have a bad night, and that's something I always would tell my friends. You know, you go out and see some of these, whatever kind of music is out there, and these huge festivals of not rock, you know, other kinds of music where it's just all pre-recorded or whatever it is, lip sync. I'm like, you know what? It takes, and I'm going to, hopefully you don't have to bleep me out, but it takes balls to go out there and have a bad night. It takes balls to go out there and suck because you're gonna. It's going to happen. You're going to have a bad night. If you're playing everything, if you're doing everything live and you're for real, you're going to have some nights where things are not going to go well. And it's going to hurt, man. it's going to be painful. But once you get through that and you can get through to the nights and blues and that kind of rock and improv kind of a rock, humble pie and that kind of thing where, you know what, you're going to have the magic too.
Yeah.
And it's worth it. It's worth it to get to the magic.
Now, were there days, or I should say, let me rephrase it. Were there nights back in the day where you had bad nights just because you were just living it up too much as a rock star?
Yes, I'm sure. I mean, there was a couple. I mean, of course, with Great White, we had a couple of nights where, you know, I literally had taken my instrument and stuck it through a guitar cabinet. But the most recent, and I've got a great story about that one out with the Scorpions. But the most recent one, I went to Scotland with an Australian band called 2200, where I was fronting and singing. And we were opening for Slash and playing all these huge arenas and stuff out there in the UK. And we were in Scotland. And I thought, damn it, I'm in Scotland. I've got to figure out if I do like scotch or not. So I go to the downstairs, you know, lobby bar, and I like go to the bartender. I go, hey buddy, you're going to have to show me, give me a scotch 101 here. And so he's like, all right, lad. And he starts, you know, pouring me different scotches, and I'm smelling, he's like, you know, get your nose in it. And I'm getting my nose in there. I'm smelling it. I'm like, okay, now I get it. And I had too many. Next day we're playing in Glasgow, and I got up in front of 10,000 people, and I told them straight up, I go, I don't know how good I'm going to be here tonight. I had a wee bit of the Glenfiddich last night, and they went fucking bananas, man. They're like, hell yeah. You know, you gotta love that. But yeah, there you go.
No, you know, I was in Louisville one time, and the 25-year-old girl behind the bar at the Plaza Hotel or wherever I was staying knew more about whiskey and bourbon than anybody I'd ever met in my life. You know, I know exactly what you mean. Those are fun nights.
Yeah, and you know what? I learned an appreciation for it that I didn't have before, and of course, I learned the next day I was not feeling so great, but you know, whatever. I got through the gig, and it was a good gig, and God bless those people over there too, man. They're a lot of fun.
So, all right, you brought it up, so now you got to tell me. So, how does your guitar end up in an amp at a Scorpion show, in a cabinet?
It was the first show that we did. Great White was opening for the Scorpions, and this was a crazy world tour, I think it was. And it was, I think we were playing in Meadowlands or something like that. And it was just a, you know, for whatever reason, it just was not going well the whole show, the first show of the tour. And I was so stoked. I mean, I am absolutely one of the biggest Klaus Meine and Rudolf Schenker fans, right? Like, I couldn't believe I was out there with these guys. And it was going so badly. And at the end of the show, I literally took my instrument and I thought, we had these fake, you know, cabinets back then. So basically it was just plywood, you know, with speaker cloth on it. And I thought, I didn't know. I went at it with the neck of my instrument. I tried to, you know, put it through. I thought, yeah, there's a speaker hole here someplace. Well, I didn't want to go. So I hit it again. And then I hit it again. And then I ended up jamming my instrument's neck through the plywood. I actually made a hole in the plywood. And my bass was literally hanging out, you know, sticking out of this cabinet in the air, you know, the whole arena. I just thought it was hilarious.
Wait a second. Hold on. Wait. Hold on. So I've been in this business for 30 years. I saw you guys back in the day before I got on the radio and everything. I've heard of backing tracks and different things like this. Not saying you guys, but I'm saying like used in the live setting. But you guys actually used used props on stage. It looked like amps. Was this kind of like commonplace for some bands back in the day?
Oh, for sure.
Was it really?
Yeah, for sure, because you're carrying some, like, staging. You know, especially if you're an opening band, you can't carry much. Mm-hmm. It's expensive. And real cabinets are heavy. They're very heavy because they've got the speakers, and so you're dealing with the weight, and it just costs money to move that stuff around. So you'd have some real cabinets in there, but a lot of them were just kind of like, you know, a facade, fakes. And back in that day, of course, we used to have, you know, lines of these Marshall cabinets and stuff. And so, yeah, we had some dummies up there, and I didn't know. I was trying to ram my guitar neck through a dummy cabinet, and almost electrocuted myself in the process, which was dumb.
That's life for rock and roll. You know, I was just listening to Jericho's podcast yesterday, and he was talking with the guys from Warrington and my friend Bill from Firehouse and the Trickster guys about that tour back in the early 1990s. And man,
I love Bill. Bill's awesome.
Bill's like, you know, one of my friends. He married a girl right here from Michigan, you know, not too far from here, in the southern part of Michigan here in Detroit. But anyways, just listening to those guys brought back so many interviews, like when I was first starting radio back in 1990 and stuff. And, you know, I saw you guys, and this may be the only time you've ever done this, but I saw you guys play once at a racetrack, a horse racetrack. Do you remember that?
We've done a couple.
Have you really? Okay.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
We did
all kinds of different racetracks, you know.
This was in Buffalo, and where I grew up. So I moved to Detroit in 1995. And I remember Jack, I kind of knew a little bit, and he took one of my friend's Harleys for a ride around the track. I remember that.
Anyways,
they were trying to get younger people there to the racetrack to bet on the horses, and you guys played. And then after you guys played, they had this stage, they just pulled away, and they raced horses then.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've done. These festival producers and promoters, they'll set up wherever they can. And we've done a couple of those. I've done a couple of those where there's inclement weather and, you know, lightning strikes. And, you know, you never know when you're outdoors, man.
Yeah. So speaking of Jack, he wanted me to ask you about the Night Ranger wallet story.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
That's all he said.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a good one. You know, we were all such green. We were just, that was the first tour that we went out on. It was the first tour that I'd ever been out on. And Great White was just kind of getting going for the Once Bitten album. And we went out with Night Ranger, and they're such wonderful, cool dudes, right? Really nice and very tolerant, right? Because we were just a bunch of spastics. But they one day we went back into our dressing room after a show, and I can't recall if I went and I couldn't find my wallet in my bag. I'm like, oh my God, I can't find my wallet. And everybody's like, oh my God, I can't find mine either. And so all of us were panicking. We're a bunch of, you know, 20 something. So my credit cards and my phone card. I mean, we're talking way back, right? Holy shit. And then one guy out of it, hey, I have a different wallet in here. And so I took out a wallet. It was, you know, I had Jack's wallet, or Jack had mine. And they'd come in, they'd take in all our wallets and switch them around.
Yeah, I texted him last night. I'm like, hey, I'm going to be talking to Tony. Give me something to tell him about, you know, the Night Ranger. And it's like, I'm trying to remember. I know I met Brad Gillis once, because I'm such a fan of that Speak of the Devil record, you know?
Oh, he's awesome! Yeah,
yeah,
good job.
Yeah, that was great. But by the way, what's going on with Jack Russell's Great White?
You know, we're hanging back. We're waiting for things to stabilize and for there to be a real safe way to go out and do those kind of shows. We're just waiting for the right time to get out there and play again. And same thing with me. You know, we want to make sure that when we go out, and I talked to Jimmy about this, you know, that when we do this, let's make sure that everything's cool and that everybody's, you know, as relatively safe as we can make it. But we want to get out and play. And I know people want to get out.
Yeah.
People are going crazy. You know, if we have to do a drive-in, you know, there's a drive-in theater shows that are happening now. There's some kind of social distancing shows going on at some of these clubs, and there's a way. When there's a will, there's a way, and things are going to stabilize, and we'll all get to see each other soon, I hope, you know, because we really miss getting out there and playing and rubbing elbows with everybody.
Yeah, I just saw that. I was just telling Kevin Martin from Candlebox last week that I saw that Metallica driving thing, which was obviously recorded and it played across North America. And not only was it cool to see and, you know, hear, and the band was obviously live. Obviously, you know, it was recorded, but they were playing live. It was cool to be out with other music fans because it's been a while since I've had a chance to, like, talk to some of the radio station listeners and stuff like that and Metallica fans, you know?
Well, music is a communal thing, and, you know, that's that, you know, it's a communal thing when we all hear and discover new music as well. And, you know, it's a shared experience, and it's supposed to be a shared experience. So, yeah, we're all about that. We want people to hear our album and hear, you know, the songs off this, and for people to at one time to kind of discover it and go, hey, did you hear that? Have you heard that recently? You know, that's what it's all about. And so we are itching to get out there and play and support this album right now.
It is funny because when I thought about asking you about the current crop of bands, Dirty Honey, for whatever reason, was stuck in my head. And I know those guys a little bit. That'd be awesome to hop on a bill with those guys because you guys would fit perfectly with them.
That would be a fun bill. Yeah. And then we'll get up together and do some jams. That to me is the essence of that kind of music too. It should be loose. It should be liquid, man. Where we get on, should we jump up together and play a Humble Pie song? Yes, we should do that. You know, and see what happens, and let the audience, you know, see something special.
Yeah, I'll float a message out to a Mark from the band that we were talking about him. Hey, the next person I'm talking to is Dave Ellefson. It's the 30th anniversary of Rust in Peace coming up here in a couple weeks. Do you have any memories of that record? Did that record playing into your psyche at all?
You know, I think we were label mates, if I'm not mistaken. You know, you're talking about a time in my life where, I mean, my head was barely screwed on. So
is that right? Yeah.
But I do remember some. I remember some of the tracks. I remember some of the tracks for sure. And I met actually Dave Mustaine was one of the funnier guests at this party we had in London one time, and Dave was. I just remember talking to Dave through that whole night and, you know, having drinks or whatever and doing, you know, what we did back in those days. And he was cool to chat with. I remember that much. He was a cool cat.
It sounds to me like you really took advantage of the rock star lifestyle back in the day.
There's a little bit of that. Yeah, for sure. And I was, you know, and then I was always the kid, you know, and I was a kid, you know, we're talking 21 years old.
Right.
I was pretty studious guy. So at the time I'd be the guy that was curled up in my bunk with a book, you know what I mean? And trying not to get too crazy, but there were times where you just couldn't avoid it.
was there a guy, like, you know, I talked to so many people, like you remember Dimebag Darrell, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So Dimebag and his brother Vinny were the guys that would, like, just keep the party going. And I've talked to numerous guys that would have to make, you know, Irish exits so that they wouldn't just, you know, become a puddle every single night. Was there a guy back in the day like that?
Gosh.
Well, or a lot of them.
You know, well, I do remember meeting Dime. He was, I guess, for whatever reason, he was a real fan of, he loved Jack's voice. And I remember him, it's very brief, but I remember him coming back and being, you know, a little bit fan, you know, a little awestruck. It was actually kind of interesting to see, you know, with Jack, which was cool. Good grief. You know, we were out with Rat and Robin. Robin was one of those guys, I think. He was working hard at it, you know, a little too hard.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, we go out with Dawkins, with Don Dawkins, and Mick Brown is always a good time.
Yeah. Yeah. Wild, right?
He's always fun. He really is. Yeah.
Yeah.
You got to steer clear of him every once in a while because you'll end up hurting.
Yeah, when you guys were coming up through the ranks back in the mid-'80s, I'd go see you guys, you know, opening up and playing, you know, with, you know, the Cinderellas or Bon Jovis or whoever you were touring with back at the time. But it was so cool because there was such a mystique around the bands with just, you know, Hit Parade and magazines and Rip and, you know, stuff like that. And but nowadays, it's like this. It's almost like the mystique and everything is gone with the internet and how much the bands share with the fans. What do you think about that?
It's kind of odd, isn't it? I just had this discussion with my girlfriend the other day too about magazines and how that used to kind of give, you know, you only were that close to that band, and that's as close as you're going to get is a picture and maybe an article. unless you go to the show, you know, it is a little, you know, it's just not as, it's a lot more work. I'll just put it that way. It's
yeah.
a lot more work. You got to keep your eyeball on X amount of sites and X amount of social media sites. And you're always, it seems like I'm always, you know, trying to look attentive and I'm, you know, you try. But at some point, It does, you know, you get to a point where you're just not able to, but we try, and you know, I think it's important to look to be somewhat accessible. You have to these days.
Yeah, it is kind of weird too. It's like, you know, like you're saying, it's like there was always such like a mystique. It's like what was Ronnie James Dio doing before the show or something. Now it's like everybody knows, you know, not that, you know, God rest his soul, but it's like, you know what I'm saying? It's like bands they post so much. Some of them do, some post a little bit less than others, but in a weird way too, it's kind of a way to get closer to the fans, especially in this world, in this pandemic. Can you imagine having this back in 1985?
Oh, I cannot. No, well, I mean, you know, it's going to, you're talking about a completely different, media at the time.
Yeah.
Things would come out so much slower. I mean, everything is instantaneous right now. So, yeah, I mean, I guess it is kind of cool. I like doing some of this, you know, stuff where I'll set up in my place and I'll take an acoustic guitar out and say, you know what, I want to share this with you guys. I'm going to bang out a version of Do It Again from Steely Dan. I'm going to
yeah.
do that. Just because it's come, it's something I want to do right now. I'm feeling this. So here you go. That's cool, man. You know, that's pretty awesome, but it does open the door for you to do, make some mistakes too, and post things that maybe you shouldn't. So.
Well, you know, you do that now for the fans, but back in 1985, you did it for drunken strippers on a bus. So it's kind of like the same thing. Right?
Yeah, right? Oh, man. I'll plead the fifth.
Hey, Tony, listen, man, it's been great talking to you. The record is out, Shadowing the Thrill, Sugar Bowl, and we wish you the best luck of that. I got to get that one on vinyl. It looks so kick-ass. I saw that on your Instagram and stuff with, like, the red and all that. It looks awesome.
Oh, yeah, it is really a nice package, and that is a limited edition. So once those are gone, they're gone, and I think we're getting down to the last couple of units there. So, yeah, beautiful thing. And sounds great. Gosh, you know, there's something about vinyl that just makes guitars just sound like they're supposed to sound.
Yeah, yeah, no doubt.
Yeah.
It's my favorite, so.
Please, we're looking forward to getting out there and seeing you guys. And so I'll make sure I'm going to send you these pictures. These are so awesome. You're going to die. So I'm going to send you these. We're going to get out there again. And Detroit has always been such a good place for me and my whole career through Great White and everything else I've ever done. So we love the state, and we can't wait to get out there and play again.
All right, Tony. Well, thanks so much for the time, man. I do appreciate it. Good luck.
All right, brother. Take care, man.
Man, sometimes, you know, talking to guys like Tony just brings back all sorts of memories of my childhood and growing up. And that's really one of the cool things I get to take away from this gig. You know, I talked about this before that it's like, yeah, there's people with bigger houses and bigger bank accounts. But you know what? I get to talk to some of my childhood heroes. Brings back a flood of memories talking to somebody like Tony. Really cool. And like I said in the beginning, I was texting back and forth with Jack Russell last night. So maybe we'll get Jack on a future episode. Well, not maybe, like definitely we'll get Jack on a future episode of the Talkin' Rock and Meltdown podcast. In the meantime, got to thank Tony. And like I mentioned in there, David Ellefson from Megadeth, 30th anniversary of Rust in Peace is coming up on September 24th. So we're going to talk to David before that. And maybe Dave Mustaine. We'll see if we can finagle a way to get Dave Mustaine on the podcast as well. In the meantime, as always, thank you so much for listening to Talkin' Rock with Meltdown.
Thank you for listening to Talkin' Rock with Meltdown. You can help this podcast grow by giving it a 5-star rating and writing a review on Apple and iTunes. Plus, feel free to subscribe and share it with your friends. Until next time, thanks for listening to Talkin' Rock.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' on You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.